So picture this, using light, just plain old light, to fight diseases. Sounds a bit like laser beams from a sci-fi movie, doesn't it?
It kind of does, yeah.
But it's actually a cutting-edge area of science. We were digging through some seriously cool chemistry concepts, you know, the kind that make you the most interesting person at a party, inspired by our cocktail party chemistry idea.
Right.
And this whole thing about light-activated therapies for, like, cancer. Just jumped out. It's genuinely fascinating.
It really is. I mean, the elegance of it, being able to harness something as fundamental as light to selectively target, eliminate disease cells while leaving the healthy ones pretty much alone. Well, it says a lot about how far we've come in understanding molecules and, you know, designing them.
Exactly. And that's sort of our mission today. We want to dive deep into how these light-activated drugs actually work. We're focusing specifically on something called photodynamic therapy, PDT for short. Right?
PDT, yeah. Think of it as a really precise way to treat disease. At its core, photodynamic therapy uses these special molecules, photosensitizers, and then a precisely aimed light source.
Okay. So when that specific light hits those photosensitizers, it kicks off a whole process that leads to the destruction of the targeted diseased cells. And crucially for you, the patient, it minimizes damage to the surrounding healthy tissue. That's the goal.
Okay. Right. So these photosensitizers are like dormant agents. They're just floating around, harmless, until they get their specific signal, that particular wavelength of light, and then bam, they switch on and fight the disease.
Precisely. They're designed to be inert, basically harmless, until that light energy is applied. What's really fascinating here is the control it gives us.
Control? How so?
Well, we can choose photosensitizers that tend to build up more in diseased tissues than healthy ones. And then we can shine the light with remarkable accuracy just onto those specific spots.
Which is a huge deal, surely, when you think about the sort of collateral damage from some older treatments.
Absolutely.
Now, you said cancer, but it's not just for cancer, is it? I thought I read something about other uses. You're right. Yeah. While a lot of the research is focused on oncology, PDT has shown real promise in treating a variety of other conditions, too.
Like what?
Well, think about common skin issues like acne, even psoriasis. Targeted light activation can be very effective there. It's even being used in ophthalmology for eyes to manage age-related macular degeneration, which is a major cause of vision loss for many people.
Wow. Okay. That's quite a range. So this isn't some brand new idea just invented last year, then. It must have a history.
Oh, definitely. The basic idea actually has roots stretching way, way back. Ancient Egypt, believe it or not.
Really? Ancient Egypt?
Yeah. They apparently used sunlight combined with certain plant extracts, maybe, to treat skin conditions like vitiligo. Of course, their understanding of why it worked was, let's say, limited.
Right. Not quite the molecular level understanding we have now.
Not quite, no. The more scientific basis started to emerge in the early 1900s. There was a German scientist, Hermann von Tepiner. He noticed that certain dyes became toxic to microorganisms, but only when exposed to light. That was a key observation.
Ah, so light plus something equals toxic.
Basically, yes. That was fundamental. Then, if you fast forward to the 1960s, that's when we saw a really major breakthrough with something called hematoporphyrin derivative, or HPD.
HPD, okay.
This was really the first photosensitizer that showed genuine potential specifically for treating tumors. Mm. So yeah, while today's applications are super advanced, the core concept has been kicking around for quite a while.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, especially for those cocktail party chats. We started looking at some specific molecules, and this name kept popping up, texafrin. What's the story with these? Are they related to that HPD thing?
They're related in concept, but they're a distinct class. Texafrines belong to a group called expanded porphyrins. Now, you've probably heard of porphyrins. They're vital in nature, like the heme in your blood, chlorophyll in plants.
Right, right. Involves in carrying oxygen and photosynthesis.
Exactly. Texafrines are synthetic cousins, you could say. They're structurally similar, but a bit larger. And they have some unique chemical properties that make them really interesting for medicine.
And one of those unique things is how easily they can be reduced. You mentioned that. Why is that important?
Precisely. That ease of reduction is key. It lets them act as what we call redox mediators.
Redox mediators.
Yeah.
Okay, break that down a bit.
Think of them as electron shuttles. They can accept an electron easily and then pass it on. In the presence of certain things inside cells, reducing agents like vitamin C or NADPH, and crucially, oxygen, they can kickstart the production of reactive oxygen species, ROS.
ROS, right. Reactive oxygen species. We hear about those often in a bad context, like causing damage.
They can, yes. But here, in this therapeutic setting, we're harnessing that damaging potential.
Yeah.
These ROS, things like superoxide and hydrogen peroxide, are highly toxic to cells. The whole point is to generate them specifically inside the disease cells to trigger their self-destruction.
Ah, turning the cell's own chemistry against it. Clever.
It is.
And there's one particular texaferin that's been studied a lot, motexafin.
Mm.
Gadolinium. That's a mouthful.
It is. Motexafin gadolinium, sometimes just gone compound one in papers. It's a modified gadolinium texaferin. It's been a major focus, especially for Professor Jonathan Sessler's group down at the University of Texas at Austin. Pharmacyclics, Inc. also developed it further.
Okay, Professor Sessler, UT Austin. Got
right.
it. So how does this motexafin gadolinium actually work? What's the mechanism they think is happening?
So the proposed mechanism is pretty neat. Once motexafin gadolinium gets inside a cell, it's thought to accept an electron from some of the cell's own reducing molecules, things like ascorbate, which is vitamin C, and NADPH, which is involved in metabolism.
Okay.
This electron transfer forms a reduced texaferin radical. This radical intermediate then reacts really quickly with oxygen that's present in the cell.
And that makes the ROS.
Exactly. It produces superoxide, which then gets converted pretty fast into hydrogen peroxide. And hydrogen peroxide is a known trigger for apoptosis.
Apoptosis programmed cell death. So the drug basically tricks the cell into killing itself using its own internal chemistry and oxygen.
That's the idea. It hijacks the cell's reducing power to generate the toxic agent right where it's needed, like a Trojan horse, as you said earlier.
Yeah. And didn't you also say it shows up on MRI scans? That seems useful.
Yes, that's another really interesting aspect for you as a potential patient, because it contains gadolinium thuride, which is paramagnetic.
Meaning it interacts with magnetic fields.
Correct. It acts as an MRI contrast agent. It makes the areas where it accumulates brighter on the MR image, so doctors can actually see where the drug has gone in the body.
And it's selective, right? It goes more to the tumor than the normal tissue. That seems critical for avoiding side effects.
Absolutely crucial. MRI studies have shown it really does prefer to accumulate in tumors.
Mm.
We're talking ratios of up to maybe 9-to-1 tumor versus adjacent normal tissue. And in some specific cases, like brain metastases, it was reported as high as 50-to-1.
50-to-1, wow.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is that studies suggested that giving multiple daily injections seemed to increase the amount that built up in the target tumors over time. So you can potentially load the tumor up with it.
That kind of selectivity is exactly what you'd want compared to older chemos that just hit everything.
It's a major advantage they were aiming for, definitely. Minimizing that systemic toxicity is key.
Okay, so that's motexafin gadolinium. But there was another texaferin you mentioned, lutetium texaferin, Lutex. How's that one different?
Right, Lutex or lutetium texaferin, also developed by Pharmacyclics. This one is designed more as a traditional photosensitizer for direct photodynamic therapy.
Meaning it needs the light activation we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Unlike the motexafin gadolinium, which uses the cell's internal chemistry.
Exactly. Lutex is activated by an external light source of a specific wavelength. That light energy kicks the Lutex molecule into an excited state, and that's what leads to the generation of those cytotoxic reactive oxygen species, primarily singlet oxygen in this case.
Okay, so light hits Lutex. Lutex makes singlet oxygen kills the cell.
That's the simplified version, yes.
Yeah.
And the studies looked promising. Preclinical work in animals showed really remarkable PDT activity.
And in people.
It went through a phase I clinical trial for metastatic tumors that had spread to the skin or just under it, and the results were encouraging. Last I checked, it was in phase 2 trials, specifically looking at recurrent breast cancer that has spread to the chest wall.
Okay, so another promising avenue. Now, there's one more. XCY-Turian injection, also gadolinium-based.
Yes, XCY-Turian, also a gadolinium texaferin from Pharmacyclics. But its main role is different again. It's being developed primarily as a radiation enhancer.
A radiation enhancer. So it makes radiation therapy work better.
That's the goal. The idea is to make tumor cells more susceptible, more vulnerable to the damaging effects of standard radiation treatment.
How does it do that? Does it, like, interfere with the cell's repair mechanisms or something?
That's part of the thinking, yes. It seems to potentiate the effects of radiation. Animal studies across different tumor types showed that combining XCY-Turian with radiation led to significantly better tumor control, even complete responses in some models, compared to radiation alone. And importantly, this was seen using drug doses and radiation levels similar to what might be used clinically.
Okay, and the human trials, what did they show?
There was a Phase IBoy trial specifically in patients with brain metastases. The results suggested that adding XCY-Trena to standard whole brain radiation therapy improved survival and seemed to provide better local tumor control, meaning the radiation was more effective at shrinking or eliminating the tumors within the brain.
And presumably, like the Motexafin gadolinium, it selectively accumulates in the brain tumors.
Yes, the MRI data from that trial confirmed it. XCY-Tran showed selective uptake and retention within the brain metastases, with very little accumulation in the surrounding normal brain tissue. That selectivity is obviously critical when you're dealing with the brain.
That figure one you mentioned, the MRI scans, that was from this XCY-Trin trial, wasn't it? Showing the before and after.
Yes, exactly. It shows a patient with multiple brain metastases before treatment, and then scans taken about 11 months after they received the combination of radiation and XCY-Trin. You can see a really dramatic reduction in the tumors. It's quite a striking visual of the potential.
It really is. Okay, so Texafrians can work via internal chemistry, like Motexafin gadolinium, via direct light activation, like Lutex for PDT, or as radiation enhancers, like XCY-Trin. That's pretty versatile.
It is.
But I also recall reading something about linking them to other drugs,
Yeah.
like combining them somehow.
Ah, yes, that's another very exciting area. Texafrans can be chemically joined or conjugated to other therapeutic agents. A really good example is work done on Texafran platinum 2 conjugates.
Platinum drugs like
Yeah.
cisplatin and carboplatin, the standard chemotherapy drugs.
Exactly. Drugs like cisplatin are workhorses in cancer treatment, but a huge problem is resistance. Tumors can become resistant to platinum drugs, making them ineffective.
Right, platinum resistance is a massive challenge.
So researchers designed these conjugates, specifically named Cystex-42 and Oxelitex-43, hoping the texafrin part could help overcome that resistance.
How would that work? Does the texafrin somehow sneak the platinum past the cell's defenses?
That's essentially the idea. Studies, particularly with Oxelitex-43, showed something really interesting. They found that this conjugate could deliver similar amounts of platinum into both platinum-sensitive cancer cells and cells that had become resistant.
Ah, whereas the normal platinum drug wouldn't get into the resistant ones as well.
Precisely. Resistant cells often pump the drug out or prevent it from getting in effectively. By linking it to the texafrin, which seems to get in anyway, they could bypass some of those resistance mechanisms.
And did that translate to better killing of the resistant cells?
Yes. They observed increased formation of platinum DNA adducts. That's the actual DNA damage platinum causes inside the resistant cells treated with the conjugate. And ultimately, this led to a significant reduction in the level of resistance compared to using the traditional platinum drugs alone.
So the texafrin acts like a delivery vehicle, a guided missile maybe, getting the platinum payload into resistant cells. That's incredibly clever.
It leverages the potential tumor targeting ability of the texafrin to basically boost the effectiveness of a known chemo agent, especially where it's failing due to resistance. It's a smart strategy.
Okay, we've covered a lot about these light-activated drugs and the really cool examples with texafrins, but let's just circle back quickly to the basic science of PDT itself. How does the light actually do the damage? You mentioned type I and type II reactions.
Right. So once the photosensitizer molecule absorbs the light energy, it gets boosted into an excited state. From there, it typically transitions into a slightly lower but longer-lived excited state called the triplet state. And it's from this triplet state that the main action happens, usually via two main pathways, type I and type II.
Okay, type I first. What's that involve?
In a type I reaction, the excited triplet photosensitizer directly interacts with other molecules nearby biomolecules within the cell, like lipids or proteins. This interaction usually involves transferring an electron or a hydrogen atom.
And that creates bad stuff.
It creates free radicals and radical ions. These are highly unstable molecules that then react further, often with oxygen, to produce those reactive oxygen species like superoxide radicals or hydrogen peroxide, leading to cellular damage. It's kind of an indirect route to ROS.
Okay, makes sense. So what about type 2?
Type 2 is often considered the dominant pathway for many photosensitizers used in PDT. Here, the excited triplet photosensitizer doesn't directly react with biomolecules. Instead, it transfers its excess energy directly to ground state oxygen molecules, the normal oxygen, O2, that's present in tissues.
And what is that energy transfer due to the oxygen?
It excites the oxygen molecule into a highly reactive state called singlet oxygen. It's still O2, but its electrons are arranged differently, making it much more eager to react chemically.
Singlet oxygen, that sounds familiar. Is that the main weapon in PDT?
It's often considered the primary cytotoxic agent, yes. Singlet oxygen is incredibly reactive and has a very short lifetime in cells, meaning it reacts very close to where it's generated.
And what does it react with?
Oh, lots of things essential for cell survival. It readily damages lipids and cell membranes, essential proteins, and even nucleic acids like DNA and RNA. This widespread damage is what ultimately kills the cell.
So whether it's the free radicals from type 1 or the singlet oxygen from type 2, the end game is causing overwhelming damage to the cancer cell.
Exactly. And how well a photosensitizer works is often related to how efficiently it produces singlet oxygen, something called its singlet oxygen quantum yield. This depends on the molecule's structure and how efficiently it gets into that reactive triplet state.
And when the cell gets hit with all this damage from ROS or singlet oxygen, what actually happens to it? Does it just explode?
Usually not. A key outcome, and often the preferred one therapeutically, is apoptosis, that programmed cell death we mentioned earlier.
Right.
The cellular damage triggers internal signaling pathways that tell the cell to essentially commit suicide in a controlled way. It dismantles itself neatly from the inside out. This is generally better than necrosis, which is uncontrolled cell death that can spill cell contents and cause inflammation. So apoptosis is cleaner, less collateral damage for you.
That makes a lot of sense. Aim for controlled demolition, not just blowing things up.
Precisely.
So looking ahead now, What's next for PDT and these kinds of therapies? Where is the research heading?
Well, there's a lot of exciting work going on. One big area is combination therapies.
Combining PDT with other treatments.
Exactly. Combining PDT with standard treatments like radiotherapy or chemotherapy. For instance, studies are looking at using low doses of chemo drugs like cisplatin alongside PDT to see if they work together synergistically, meaning the combined effect is greater than just adding the individual effects.
Making 1+1=3 sort of thing.
Kind of, yeah. The idea is you might be able to use lower doses of each, potentially reducing side effects while getting a better anti-cancer effect.
And what about expanding beyond cancer? You mentioned infectious diseases earlier.
Absolutely. That's a very active area, using light and photosensitizers to kill bacteria, especially antibiotic-resistant strains, viruses, fungi. It's called antimicrobial PDT. It holds a lot of potential.
That could be huge, with antibiotic resistance being such a growing problem.
It could. And of course, there's always the ongoing search for new and better photosensitizers. Researchers are designing molecules that absorb different wavelengths of light, particularly light that penetrates deeper into tissues.
Why is that important?
Because current PDT is often limited by how deep the activating light can reach. If you could use near-infrared light, for example, which goes deeper, you could potentially treat larger or deeper tumors that aren't accessible right now.
Oh, okay. Extending the reach. And I think I saw something about using tissue engineering, like 3D models.
Yes, that's another interesting development. Using 3D cell cultures or engineered tissue models allows researchers to test PDT under conditions that are much closer to a real tumor environment compared to just flat layers of cells in a dish.
So better lab models to figure out the best way to use PDT.
Exactly. It helps test different light doses, drug concentrations, and treatment combinations in a more realistic setting before moving into animal studies or clinical trials.
Wow. This has been a really illuminating deep dive into light-activated therapies. The whole concept, using light and chemistry in such a targeted way against diseases like cancer, It still feels quite sci-fi, even knowing the science now.
It does have that feel, doesn't it? But while photodynamic therapy and these advanced compounds like texafirins are, you know, still relatively young in the grand scheme of medicine, the progress is undeniable, the potential for high selectivity.
Meaning fewer side effects for the patient.
Exactly. That potential really could revolutionize how we treat certain diseases down the line. It offers a different paradigm compared to many systemic therapies.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Given how far this has come,
yeah.
What other seemingly futuristic ways of using chemistry and light might be just over the horizon for treating diseases or even just improving health? It's definitely something fascinating to keep an eye on.